call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Wednesday to you. Glad you can be with us. It's Wake Up Call with Tony D. And Ron, is Ron here today? Ron, is Ron here today?
Yeah,
there he is. You're back. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling better. You know, yeah. I mean, it was one of those things I slowly felt it coming on over the weekend, and then it just blasted me yesterday.
I'm getting a little, when I got back, I was like a little stuffy in the head and everything. I was like, oh, shoot, did I catch something in Houston? But, yeah, you were kind of sounding a little little ill Monday, so I was glad you got a day of rest.
You know what it was? You know what it is, too? It's just the fact of saying, you know what, I'm going to take some nighttime cold medicine that I know is going to knock me you-know-what out.
Yep.
And I don't want to have to wake up. And that's exactly what I got to do.
Yesterday, I was up.
I was like, oh, you know, let me do something. I just can't lay. I'm not the type of person who can just lay in bed all day.
Right.
So, you know, I was doing laundry and things like that. But it was just, you know, it was just that feeling of like, I'm going to take these two little pills and I'm not going to wake up for 10 hours.
Yeah,
and
that's a great feeling.
And that's what I wanted.
Great feeling. You drift off. You're in a hole of the world.
Yeah, you slowly start feeling it come up.
Yep.
On you.
Well, I'm glad you're back and glad you are feeling better. Par 3 contest today at Augusta National. The Masters starts on Thursday. Tiger Woods had a press conference yesterday, and he said, look, I don't know how many of these I got left. And it suddenly kind of hit me yesterday that, you know, we always wait for athletes, especially star athletes, when is it going to be over? Right. And when is it going to be done? And for golfers, that journey takes a lot longer than any other athlete. Right. LeBron James is coming to the end of his career. At some point, LeBron is not going to be an NBA player anymore. We looked at Roger Federer. You know, we look at some other athletes that have been kind of disappearing in our life. They've been around forever. Serena Williams, you know, they've been around forever. And then one day they're not around anymore. But golf's a little different. Golf is a sport that you can play and be competitive in your 40s, in your mid-40s. And then when you get to be 50, they go, oh, and by the way, here's a whole other thing you can join. And the other thing about golf is that where Brett Favre or John Elway or Dan Marino, they're never going to play football in front of you again at any level. John Elway is not going to get in a uniform and play old-time football with old-time players in front of people. That's it. He's done, right? And that's the way sports is. Sidney Crosby is in his mid-30s. One day he's not going to play hockey anymore in front of people. Oh, they get together for a little old-time game or whatever, like at Yankee Stadium, but that's about it for athletes. But golf, especially golfers who are winners of major championships, every year they get back in the spotlight. If you win the Masters, as many of you know, you get to go play that golf course every year until you're done with Earth, until they put you in the ground. You get invited. Now, they do kind of ask you when you reach a certain age if you wouldn't mind not playing competitively. So you can come for the dinner, you can wear the jacket, but you're 79 years old. You can't hit it more than 250 yards anymore. We wouldn't mind it if you didn't play competitively. And a lot of the guys decide to do that. Jack Nicklaus hasn't played competitively, even though they're allowed to, because that's the tournament. They don't, because the course is too long, and they don't want to embarrass themselves. They'll hit the opening tee shot, and that's about it. But because Tiger Woods, at 47 years old, is a Masters champion 5 times over, he gets invited to the stage forever. Which means there's never going to be a point where Tiger Woods is really not in our lives until, I don't know, until he's 70. Maybe when he's 75. Who knows? Like, he's going to be a ceremonial starter at some point if he lives that long. You know, if he lives a ripe old age of 80, he'll be eventually a starter at the ceremonial starter of this golf tournament. He's going to be part of this golf tournament in such a major way that he's not going to disappear. He's not going to leave like other athletes tend to disappear. They go into broadcasting or they do other businesses or we never hear from them again. But that's not the way where this is. But it doesn't mean you're going to see them competitive. And that's the difference. When I watch Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer tournament, or I watch the, I don't know, Muirfield Village, you know, the golf tournament that Jack Nicklaus runs, if Tiger's not on the leaderboard, I don't miss him. I'm at a point now where I've accepted the fact that the sport is now being run by the Scottie Schefflers of the world, the Jordan Spieths, the Justin Thomases. I've grown to that point now. Tiger has not been a competitive winning golfer on a consistent basis for quite a long time. He's had a number of injuries. At one point, he shot in the 80s at Muirfield. He had the car accident. He's coming back from that. He's only played in one other event this year. So I'm not used. I've gotten used to Tiger not being around, right? But when it comes to Augusta, you figure there's always something about Augusta that brings out the best in Tiger Woods. If there was one major he was going to win, if you were to say, hey, Tiger hasn't won a major in a very long time, what's the one major he's still going to win? It was going to be Augusta. He knows that course so well. He is a student of history. He is a student of golf. He knows every break on every green. He knows every hill, every bump. He knows where to miss it. And that's the key to Augusta. Know where to miss it. Ben Hogan once famously said on the 11th hole is the par 4 that goes down through the chute of trees. There's a lake to the left side. The green hugs that lake. And Ben Hogan famously said one time, if you ever see me on the green with my second shot, you know I mishit it. He was not aiming for the green. It was too dangerous. It was a long shot into that green, and he always aimed for the right, and he would just pitch and run because that wasn't pretty. It was an easier shot than navigating and maybe mishitting and pulling a little to the left, going for the green, and putting it in the lake. Tiger Woods knows where to miss all the shots. And if you remember in 2019, he let everybody else ahead of him make the mistakes. He didn't blast out a back 930 like Jack Nicklaus did in 1986. He methodically went around that golf course knowing where to make his score. Everybody's going for the pin at 12. I'm just going for the center of the green on the fat part, and I'll two-putt for my par. You play around with Race Creek. I'm not going to do that. That's the way Tiger Woods gets around Augusta. And that can be as much as 40% of why you win that golf course. It could be as 50% of why you win that golf course. Now, you do need to have the ability to shape your shots and to have your short game on and your putting on. And that's where Tiger sort of is a little bit of a disadvantage to the other guys. So if you get a young person, you know, like a young Tom Kim, for example, is a young player that's in the Masters. He might be able to drive it way further than Tiger. His iron shots may be more powerful than Tiger's. His short game may be sharper than Tiger's. But that big chunk of knowledge that he doesn't have, that Tiger has, plays into Tiger Woods and his strength. The golf majors are going to be at Oak Hill for the PGA. Royal Liverpool, where Tiger won before, is going to be the British Open. Los Angeles Country Club is a new venue for major championships. Course has been around forever, but it's now starting to become a place where the USGA has decided to go and have events. And now the US Open will be there. I can tell you that Oak Hill, Liverpool, and Los Angeles Country Club, I don't expect Tiger Woods to be making the cut if he's still having problems getting around the golf course. But at Augusta, I know that place fires him up more than any place. But yesterday when he made those comments, when he said, I don't know how many years I got left, it really hit me that we are looking at a guy that's closer to being a ceremonial player. A guy like Larry Mize, who plays in this thing but never is competitive enough, rather than the Tiger that's the five-time champion, that's a guy that is still going to be able to roar the crowd and maybe get you thinking on Saturday and Sunday that something can happen. I went to the Masters one time in my life, and I went with my father when I was young, and it was 1990. And Jack Nicklaus had just turned 50. And Nicklaus had won the Masters 4 years before in 1986, one of the most famous Masters of all time. He shot a back 930 that included a birdie at 17 where Vern Lundquist said, yes, sir! He roared the crowd. The crowd went nuts. So much so that Seve Ballesteros walked off two shots because of the crowd. He had to walk back on two shots because of the noise. And Tom Kite hit it in the water at 15, and many people believe that as he was swinging, a jack roar somewhere out in the golf course caused him a distraction. He electrified the crowd. But when I was there in 90, Jack had made the cut at 50. And while he didn't win the tournament, there was a moment where he was kind of around. He was a couple shots back, but he'd make a birdie. And at Augusta, one of the great things about being at Augusta is watching a hole, let's say 16, right? You're at the 16th hole. And everybody watches, and a guy putts, everybody claps. And then as soon as it's done, soon as the golfers are done with that hole, every head spins to watch the leaderboard because they heard something in the trees and they want to know what that was. And as everybody looks up, they'll take a player like Nicholas at that time and they'll remove a red 5 and then they'll stick up a red 7 and everybody cheers and everybody goes crazy. And they do it for something they didn't see. They do it for something that they now are getting news of, that on 13, Nicholas made an eagle. Tiger Woods is going to be that golfer for a bit, where he's now 47 years old. And maybe in the next couple of years, he's going to be that guy where you're going to watch the young players battling for the green jacket. But every now and then, there's going to be a roar through the trees. And you're going to wonder where that came from. Now, back in 1990, I was absorbing it all in. And I remember a guy saying to me, when he heard the roar, that's a Nicholas roar. That's not an anybody else roar. That's a Nicholas roar. There's going to be a Woods roar. But it's not a Woods roar of a dominating golfer that's beating the field. It's a roar of, do you remember the good old days when he used to dominate this place? Do you remember the good old days when this was his golf course? And that's coming soon. And yesterday's press conference reminded me that's just around the corner.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. There used to be a saying at the Masters that no one has won the par 3 and the Masters in the same year. And I don't know. I haven't kept up with the par 3 tournament. I'm not a fan of it. But I wonder if that's still true. I mean, I guess a simple Google search of who won the par 3 tournament would probably answer that question, given that I know who won the Masters. But yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it looks like that is still the case, that no one has won the par 3 tournament and the Masters in the same year. There you go. So it's a pretty cool event.
I mean, is that even a thing, though?
What, the par 3?
Like, yeah, I mean, has there anyone ever been close in contention? It just seems like a weird stat to throw out there.
Well, I know. It used to be a thing where golfers were like, I don't want to win the par 3, and I can't win the Masters.
I mean, yeah, is it unlucky?
Well, why can't you? Yeah, I guess it's unlucky.
Like, let's see, who's Scottie Scheffler, right? He's the reigning champion.
Yeah.
Is he going to say, I don't want to win the par 3. I'm not going to compete in the par 3. Because I want to win the Masters.
He won the par 3 in 90 and then lost in a playoff to Nick Faldo. So he was the closest. But it's fun. It looks cool, right? It's the one where the kids are like in their little Masters jumper outfits and the wives caddy. And, you know, like it's because they're carrying like 2 wedges and a putter. And that's it. That's kind of the fun part of it. Jack Nicklaus's grandson. Remember that year he made a hole in one.
Yes.
While they were playing. Remember that? It was like. That was like five or six years ago.
And obviously he didn't win the Masters.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Good old man Jack didn't win the Masters. So, by the way, did you see the picture of the champions' dinner last night?
No, I haven't seen the photo yet.
Yeah, the photo's really neat. It's really neat. It's got Scheffler at the head of the table. They're all surrounding him, and you know, all the old golfers. And I thought to myself, I saw the picture last night on Twitter, and Craig Stadler, remember the walrus mustache?
Of course,
guy? Yes. So he was wearing a yellow shirt, green tie, green jacket, and it stands out in the picture. If you see the picture, it stands out. And I thought to myself, now that guy won the Masters in 1982, right? So that is 41 years ago. He won the Masters. And I started thinking, it's one thing when you see the champions, right? When you see like Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus and Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. Like, you see the guys that have won the Masters. And, you know, Bernard Langer won it twice. Jose Maria Althabel won it twice, right? You see a bunch of, and then even the guys that won it within the last 10 years, you're like, all right, they get to go to this dinner. But then I look at Craig Stadler, and I go, that guy won the Masters 41 years ago, and this is his April every year since. He gets to do this. He gets to do this. He gets to show up. Larry Mize, the same thing. They get to show up 1 week out of the year, slap that jacket on, walk around as a Masters champion, hang out at the dinner, hang out with the greats, chilling, going out to hit some balls. Too old to play, but I'll get some holes in. Why not? It's Augusta National. Get to come here every year. Why not? That's a ticket unlike any other thing in sports. I started thinking, what other thing in sports allows you to have the perks of being a champion? Like, you win an MVP award in the NBA, what does that get you? Like, does it get you access to something NBA-ish? Does the NBA have a special club that they go, now that you're an MVP, every year you can come and have dinner in this place and whatever. That's the perk of being an MVP or an NBA champion. Like, you get a ring. The NBA has a special thing once a week that you get to do. Right? We don't, like, Super Bowl champions? Yeah. Masters champions? If you are a 25-year-old kid, or in Jordan Spieth's case, a 21-year-old kid, Tiger Woods won at 21. You win this thing for the next 60 years. This is your April. This is your first week of April for the rest of your life. You get to come do this, hang out with everybody that's won, telling stories, having a great dinner, being treated like royalty. You might have had the best golf week of your life. And anybody know where Danny Willett's doing these days?
No.
Right. Does anybody?
Trevor Immelman.
Trevor Immelman is a golf commentator.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean he's a golf commentator? Like, why isn't he playing? He's not 60.
Nope.
Right? I mean, Zach Johnson won a British Open, too. Like, some of these guys won multiple majors, but some of these guys caught fire on the right time when the stars aligned.
The right weekend.
The right weekend. Charles Schwartzel, who won a live event. One just caught fire, just went, you know what? I got this.
That's the one thing. I'm looking over this photo, and is I'm wondering if, there's two individuals in the back row. I'm looking at the photo right now.
Right.
Two individuals in the back row. I wonder if they talked to any of the elder statesmen in the green jackets. Like, so, did those elder statesmen want anything to do with them?
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's a lovely looking table. I'm wondering if there was a kid table.
Yeah, right.
And they were like, I don't know. You guys go, you're sitting over there.
What was there? Yeah, exactly. How much of this live thing is going to, like, I was talking about this yesterday. If you're CBS, how much of this live thing are you doing? And how much is Augusta saying?
I mean, you got to bring it up.
You'd have to. You have to. But does the Masters go, hey, we would rather you not. We would rather you not.
But okay, but if you're going to – here's the only issue that I have with it, right? Are you just going to ignore what Phil or Dustin have been doing the past year?
If you get a final round that is Rory McIlroy, not Phil Mickelson, because he stinks.
Right.
Rory McIlroy and –
Justin Johnson. Patrick Reed
or Justin Johnson. You mean to tell me you can't talk about that if you're CBS? You can't bring that up?
Well, I mean, just in the passing, too. Oh, in his most recent tournament, he did this. It's like, you can't say that?
Well, you got to ask the Masters people.
You know, Team Aces did a great job. I mean,
can we mention that?
Teams?
Yeah, can we talk about that? But yeah, like, just seriously, looking at this photograph, and you know what I kept thinking to myself was, I was really thinking about this last night. I was like, what if John Daly had won the Masters? Wouldn't that have been awesome if John Daly won the Masters? What his dinner would have been?
Showing up
to this thing every year in a green jacket?
Well, what would he dress?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, obviously the green jacket is there. What would he pair the green jacket with?
Because when he goes to the British Open and he's in the champion's photo, he's always wearing the stuff. But it's not a... They don't have, like, a jacket. You know what I mean? Like they just have, here's the champions, British Open. But yeah, what would he pair the green jacket with? This is again, this is also one of the main reasons. It's not so much, look, I want to win a major. I'm a professional golfer. Majors are my goal, blah, blah, blah. It's like when, imagine if Patrick Mahomes said, I'm here to win Super Bowls, but you know what? If I win the Pro Bowl MVP, that's another level, right? Like, these guys all want to win U.S. Opens and British Opens and all of that. But the reason that the Masters is so special, the reason the Masters is so unique is that it has that lifetime attachment to it, and you can either go two ways as a professional golfer. You can go, I get invited to the Masters when I qualify, or I can get invited to the Masters for the rest of my life. Greg Norman has been in contention for the Masters for years and years and years, but he never won it. And because he never won it, he doesn't get to go to this. They invited him. Now they didn't invite him, but they used to invite him like, you know, you're Greg Norman, you can come. But he's not a champion. He doesn't get an automatic invite. He doesn't get to show up. So a lot of golfers, Lee Trevino never won the Masters. He's won everything else. He could not win Augusta. He fades the ball. Augusta is a drawing golf course where, you know, he really didn't like to hit those shots. And Lee Trevino, you know, he doesn't get invited to this club. This is a private party. You don't get invited. You can't go in. But if you can get in, you're doing this forever. You're Charles Coody. You get to go at 83 years old. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty fantastic. And it's got to feel great to when that green jacket is slipped onto you for the first time, like, I'm set. I know what I'll be doing every April for the rest of my life. I'll be coming to this palace, this heaven on earth, Augusta National. Hey, we'll talk more about the Masters, but coming up, I do want to get your thoughts, Ron, on the NCAA tournament from Monday night. I know you were sick, but I didn't know if you have any thoughts on UConn winning in such a way. We'll get to that coming up. And also the NBA playoffs. We've got to sort out the NBA playoffs. There's three games left for most teams. It ends on Sunday, the regular season. And it is wide open in the West, wide open for seeding. We'll talk about that coming up as well. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We roll along on Sports Map Radio. Again, this is Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Ron is back after being out yesterday sick. We are still in the basketball transition to golf mode. Draft coming up at the end of the month on the 27th. It is round one. And the NBA playoffs, which you're going to get to in a minute, still wide open in the West. We see them every day, people driving, using their phones. There's the sneak a peeker or the fast scroller who can quickly become the fender benderer, the got a tickerer, or a driver who killed someone. Pay attention. You pay the price. You drive, you text, you pay. Paid for by NHTSA. All right, so, did you have a chance to see UConn, or did you kind of have to doze off Mr. Eel?
No, I watched it. Yeah. I watched the whole thing. I mean, it was, you know, I hadn't taken the magic pill just yet.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I was curious. I mean, you know, the game was over, I think, as when it started,
yeah.
Pretty much, right? I mean, like, not even midway through the first half, you just saw the dominance come forward.
It was a game where, you know, in the beginning, it was kind of back and forth. You thought, all right, San Diego State's doing something here, but it's like, could they do it for 40 minutes?
And
the answer was no.
No, they could do it for six.
They could not hit a bucket.
They couldn't at all.
And for 10 minutes, they were held.
It was really bothering me down the stretch because, I mean, they were close. They were, you know, we've been talking about all along. You know, if you're within 10 with 2 minutes to go, and I think they were within 10 or 12 with 2 minutes to go. And then
they were within five with five to go, and then it.
Yeah.
Jenkins hit the three, and that was it.
So many teams do this thing where it's all of a sudden they just start to panic and just start taking bad shots.
I'm sorry, I meant Hawkins hit the three, and that was it. Yeah, they take bad shots.
I was
talking about that yesterday with Mike Rutherford, which was once I started seeing San Diego State settling
panic
for three-pointers, I was like, that's not their game. That's right. Not the way they play. They play physical in the paint game. They don't have outside shooters. They don't knock you out with 3-point shots. They play a slow tempo ball sort of control offense where they get the ball to the paint, they force physicality, they force fouls, they get short buckets. When they were shooting threes, they're like, that's it, this is over.
And that's why, during halftime, my thought was like, you know what, San Diego might have a chance because the scores, I mean, you know, what was that at that time? It was like 32-25 or 20-something. Yeah. I mean, small score. And they, you know, it was like they're keeping Connecticut where they need them to be. It was just that they couldn't do anything.
Right.
But exactly. Afterwards, I kept seeing this thing, this word thrown around about Connecticut. I heard it on the broadcast. I was seeing it on Twitter. And I don't know if it's true or not. And is that people were calling UConn a blue blood.
Yeah.
And now I get it. Okay, you know, it's what, five championships in 20 years?
So that's what we were talking about yesterday. Yeah,
it's impressive, but are they a blue blood?
Well, that's the question yesterday, which was, okay, how are we defining blue bloods, right? Are we defining blue bloods by schools that are consistently in the tournament and consistently in the Elite Eight, et cetera? Well, okay, that seems pretty loose. All right, so if you're looking at UConn, and what did we say all about UConn? I even talked about this with Mike Crispino. This is a school that pops up. They win, they disappear, they pop up again. Sometimes you go, oh yeah, I totally forgot they won that championship. Like, does anybody remember the 2004 finals between them and Georgia Tech in San Antonio? It's like, it's not really memorable,
right,
from a standpoint of a big shot or a big moment. They were involved in one of the worst shooting games in NCAA tournament history when they played Butler in the national championship in 2011. But the reality of it is that they have won five titles since 99. Duke has won five titles since 90. Kentucky has won three titles since 90. Like, so all of a sudden now you're saying, well, hold on one second. Who's won more championships in the last 25 years? It's UConn. It's not Kansas. It's not Duke. It's not Kentucky. It's not UCLA. It's UConn. And we talk about UConn being a blue blood. How many people were even alive to remember John Wooden and what that team was doing in the 70s? You're talking about a generation that is now saying, it's like, it reminds me of people talking about the Michael and LeBron and Kobe and people going, yeah, Bill Russell. And a generation going, yeah, I never saw him play, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, well, Bill Russell won 100 championships. Yeah, I know, but I didn't see him. It's like UCLA is a blue blood because of what
teams.
John, yeah, right? John, because of what John Wooden did in the 70s, for
right,
some people, that might as well be 100 years ago. You might as well be talking about guys in suits and hats going to the good old ball game.
And you know, to that credit, too, we've established Duke as a blue blood, and they really didn't do anything until the 90s.
Right. Right. They were in the Final Four in 86, 88,
uh-huh,
89, then 90, they won the championship. And so, no, 91 they won the championship. 90 they were in the finals. But you're right. They've come across in the last 30 years. So it's hard because UConn is one of those programs where it's not like Duke. Here's the thing with Duke. Duke has only five championships in 30 plus years, right?
Yeah.
But Duke has been in the Final Four a lot.
Yep.
A lot.
And
so
that's,
you're always,
I think that's
getting
the difference,
Duke around
is that,
in your life.
And we know of Duke. We can remember Duke having this team or that team. And I love what you said. I mean, I don't even know. Was UConn in the tournament last year?
No.
And that, I mean, no, but I mean, that's what I'm getting at, is that
right.
I don't remember. There are many
other
tournaments.
Were. Maybe they were. I'm not sure.
Forget
I know
about,
they had a low.
But forget about UConn making a Final Four. Forget about them making Elite Eight or Sweet 16. There are years I just don't even remember them being in a tournament.
Right.
Even when they were good, even when it was, Kevin Ollie coaching and Jim Calhoun coaching before him. you know, I don't. There are certain teams of the, of those guys who coach who were legendary coaches. I don't remember them at all.
Yeah, it's a weird.
But I kept hearing that over and over Monday. It's like, you know, it's another blue blood program, and I'm trying to wrap my head around. It's like, are they?
Well, again, it depends on how you define what
right.
you define blue blood. I mean, what in people's mind is a blue blood? Is, you know, for example, is it Kansas? Well, Kansas won a national title. Just won a national title a year ago. But you have to go back to 2008, the last time they won it, and then you have to go back to 1988
right.
to go back to the last time they won it then, right? Is it because there are just certain programs that personify men's basketball? I mean, UConn is always going to be the women's basketball, you know, school, right? But mm-hmm. men's, is it just because Kansas has a number of Big 12 championships?
Is it,
like, they always win the Big 12. They're always
also,
one of the top seeds.
Is it also is it also a thing like, you know, because Kansas, I almost feel like they're perennial number ones.
Yeah, right.
You know, like Kansas, you just like pencil them in for next year. Kansas is going to be a number one seed. It just feels that way every single year with them. You know, Kentucky, they've had multiple championships. And it feels like there's I guess there's got to be a larger body of work attached to it.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe
like,
so.
You know,
maybe
North
so.
Carolina is the same way. It's like those are the three that always come to my mind of blue bloods. And, you know, maybe it's because they have blue in their uniform. I don't know.
Maybe so. But, yeah, it's
and
a.
And UConn it's a, and Duke fit, certainly fit the bill on that one.
It's an interesting. It really is interesting because it goes back, you know, it's like what defines the club? It's like, you know, when the Patriots were winning a few Super Bowls early, right, in the early Brady years. Well, people didn't want to put them in the same category as the Steelers and the Cowboys and
right.
and the
Niners.
Raiders and Niners. You know, like, they didn't want to do that yet. And they were like, no, these are these legendary NFL franchises that win championships and have won championships over multiple decades, wherever. But then the Patriots started winning and you're like, now you're creating a whole new category. Like now they're in a class among themselves. Like they were doing things nobody else was doing. And if you are a pro UConn blue blood arguer, you could say you really could stand on the soapbox of find me the most successful program in NCAA tournament history in the last 25 years. Find me one that's more successful. Now, you could say, well, I define success as championship, finals appearance, Final Fours, Elite Eights, whatever. But UConn goes, we've got five and no one else has four in the last 25 years, right? I mean, they go, that's the game. Like, there's not even anybody close. Like, Duke has three since 99. That's the closest you're going to get. Kentucky has one because they won two in the mid-90s and late 90s, you know, 96 and 98. And so that makes the argument saying, but there is a feeling of, yeah, but I don't feel like they're always in my life every single year. Here's the thing.
Right.
Here's the thing. When I see Kansas, I get my tournament bracket. I know Kansas is a one seed or a two seed because they win the Big 12 all the time. They win the Big 12 regular season all the time or the Big 12 tournament, whatever. They're always on top of their conference. UConn earned a four seed because they had a lull in January. That was it. They only slipped in January. And they lost, I think, eight games this year. So, yeah, it's an interesting debate. It really is. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. And also from Monday night. By the way, we use Twitter a lot on this show. I mean, it's the one way you guys can just kind of hit us up with whatnot. But, boy, Twitter's just a dark place, isn't it, sometimes?
Oh, God.
Whoa. That astronaut that sang the national anthem was, for me, awesome. It's an astronaut. She's singing the national. Twitter tore that to pieces. Poor woman. She's up there singing the national anthem, for crying out loud. She's an astronaut.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, no pitch. Missed the notes. Yikes. Hope the game is better than this anthem.
You know what? I don't know if I want to blame Twitter or as much as American Idol back in the early days.
Is that what it is?
You know, maybe it's that. Because if you think about it, like, you remember on Star Search? You remember Star Search?
Right, yeah, Star Search.
Yeah, the contestants came on there. You didn't have someone critiquing them.
Right. You just said, here's Melissa. She juggles.
Yeah.
And she drop a couple of pins.
And then came the stars ratings.
Right, it's like
2.5 stars. It's like, all right, well, not everyone was on board with Melissa.
Right.
You know? But then American Idol came along and Simon Cowell sitting there just ripping people. It's like, that's just bloody terrible. You know, just and I almost want to blame that for what, you know, almost is like it's like the first troll of anything.
Yeah, that might be it, where people just feel.
And then Twitter, you could just hide behind your social media muscles.
I couldn't have cared less what she sounded like. I was like, all right.
I didn't even notice it.
She's an astronaut.
Yeah. Anytime somebody gets up there and sings, I'm like,
they're going to the moon. Like, what are you talking about? So what? So what if she couldn't hit the high note?
Yeah.
Oh.
I bet you she'll sing that high note higher than, you know, higher up, though.
Yeah.
Than anybody else.
Exactly. She should be, like, telling all the Twitter people, I'm going out to outer space. So do it.
Yeah, but you know what will happen.
On Twitter, I'm going to the moon.
Yeah, but then somebody was like, yeah, well, leave your voice there.
Leave your voice there, yeah. Oh, God, it's terrible.
You can sing the national anthem on the moon.
I was talking about this yesterday, too, that did you notice at the end of the game, UConn celebrating, Bill Rafferty was trying to give Jim Nance the love and the send-off, but Nance had to cut him off. He's like, I love you, but this is UConn's moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. It was very – I wonder if he thought about that before. Like, he's smart enough to go, one of these guys is going to come in. There's going to be confetti. There's going to be noise. There's going to be a celebration. And one of my guys is going to say something about me, and I gotta nip that in the bud because I can't spoil
right. I mean, he
this
did,
moment.
I think he did a fantastic job making this UConn's moment.
And too,
the
yeah.
only thing he couldn't hide, and I don't even know if this is true, but maybe I was just looking for it, was when he's talking to Dan Hurley, or he was talking to Sunoco?
Sunoco.
Okay,
yeah.
I will at some point get his name right. When he was talking to them, there was a look in his face sometimes where you could almost see that it was the realization that this is the last time I'm doing this.
Yeah, right.
And it just, you know, there was like this melancholy look on his face, like, this is it.
This is it.
We're getting closer to the end.
I was talking about this yesterday with, I remember, I was old enough to remember that when Brent Musburger lost this gig, he was the Final Four voice. And I remember thinking, wow, how do you get rid of Brent Musburger? Right.
Yeah.
I didn't understand contracts and how the business works. Now
Which,
I do.
By the way, I'm not ashamed. Now. I'm not ashamed to admit this. I feel like that was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Just...
So 90 was the last one Musburger did. He did the UNLV game. And then Nance took over after that. Nance was a relatively young guy. He was in his early
30s.
Yeah. Maybe
like
29, 30.
I mean, I thought he was like mid-30s.
I remember he was in his early 30s because he was on the 86 Masters broadcast. And the only reason I know that, one, is because he talks about it. But two, I used to have –
I would too.
I would too. But he's also – I used to have – oh, my God, this is dating me. I used to have the VHS – Masters highlight edition from the 86 Masters. I used to watch it all the time. So, and Nance was calling action on 16. And he talked about he was 28 at the time, 27, 28 at the time. So a few years later, he's now the Final Four guy. But he's done every one of them since. And we were there Saturday, and when they had the when they did the montage, it was cool. Like, you go, oh, yeah, he was there for that. Oh, he was there for that. Oh, I forgot he was there for that. Like, you start going, God, this guy's a time capsule. Like, he's calling the Arkansas championship with Bill Clinton in the crowd. Like, Bill Clinton is at the finals for Arkansas, and Jim Nance is calling the play-by-play in 94. I'm like, wow, that's a long time to be doing this. And so... I can't imagine how he held it all together, knowing that this was it.
Yeah.
But it's his decision. I mean, one time you make a decision, it doesn't hurt less, but it makes it a little easier when you know you've made this. They're not forcing you out. They didn't come to him and say, your contract's not renewed. You're going to do this one, and then that's it. Like, he's the one that said, no, I want to spend more time with my family. And the one thing is that you and I talk about it all the time, about how the transition from the week that he has leading up, he does the Final Four, and then he goes to the Masters, and it's like one of the best weeks a broadcaster could have. But he talked about it as it's nonstop studying. It's nonstop prep. And even though I was saying, even though you have people doing that for you, like getting the stories and telling you, okay, I talked to this guy and he's got an interesting backstory. His mom worked 3 jobs and his dad worked at a plant and used to play catch with them at night and play basketball for him until midnight. And then he'd wake up at 5 a.m. and go to work and he owes it all to his family. Somebody's getting that for you, but you still have to study that and know that so that when you're telling the story, you act like you're generating it, not reading it off a cue card. And Nansu has to study all that. And then he goes to the Masters. He's got 100 players, 70 players that he's got to know for the telecast. So I'm sure it's like, do I sleep? Do I go to the pool? Do I go to dinner? Or do I study this all night long until midnight? Do I get a good night's sleep? Or do I just read all the notes, the pages and pages of notes that my team is prepping for, not only this game, but the Masters? So maybe he just got a little tired of the drive. But, man, it's got to be a little bittersweet for him to know, like, he's been the voice of this tournament for 30-something years.
Yeah, since 1990.
90, yeah.
That's so 30-plus years.
God bless.
Yeah, I looked it up. He was 31 when he took over.
31. Goodness gracious. Man, when I was 31, I could have never imagined being the television voice of the Final Four.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. And then,
or even now.
Well, I don't have Jim Nance's velvety voice or strikingly handsome, good television looks. Some people just swim in the television gene pool, and you go, all right, there you go. But he used to joke about this with Fred Couples. He was on the golf team at Houston, and Fred Couples was on that team. And he knew he wasn't as good. He knew Fred was going to play professionally, and he knew he was not. And he said to Fred Couples, they used to joke in college, one day you're going to win the Masters, and I'm going to be there in the Butler cabin broadcasting it when you do. And that happened. Not only did that happened in 92. So that happened when they were in their early 30s. That's pretty remarkable, man. That's pretty good to be able to say, I had a goal, I had a dream, I found that dream, I got there. It's hard to get a television gig. It's hard to get a television network gig at a young age. And he did. He got right on board with a good old CBS. So goodbye, Jim Nance of the Final Four. But hello, friends at Augusta National this week for the Masters Golf Tournament. We got Ryan Ballingy coming up on the show this morning to talk Masters, give his thoughts on everything. That's coming up at 45 past the hour next hour, 10:45 Eastern time. I always like Ryan Ballingy. He's one of the smartest golf guests that we've got some good ones. Will Gray is good.
Yeah, Will Gray might be joining us later in the week. He couldn't do it today.
Will Gray is outstanding. But Ryan Ballingy from Golf News Net, is that right?
Yes.
Golf News Net. I always ask you if I land that right because I feel like I play word salad with that a little too much. But he's really smart when it comes to this. And the Masters is, if there's one golf tournament, the average I could take it or leave it fan watches, it's this one. I met a lot of people who watch the Masters, but they don't even know when the U.S. Open's played. I know a lot of people who watch the Masters and have no idea that there are other majors on the calendar. There's something about Augusta National that brings it all in. And I think it has a lot to do with what Tiger did in the 90s. I think when Tiger Woods exploded into that uber stardom, it also came into people looking at Augusta a lot differently. All right, coming up, we'll talk to Ryan Ballingy in hour number 3. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb. And I'm going to go down a very weird sports rabbit hole in an article that I saw on The Athletic that really had my brain kind of processing the collectibles industry. All right, I'll tell you all about that coming up as Hour 2 continues as Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.